Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Those Darn Guys Who Happen to Be Therapists. Actually, it's just that darn guy, me, Dr. Jim Weaver, who's here. I can't get my switchboard to load this morning. I don't know whether it's on strike or what, but I don't have my switchboard. I can't tune into the other darn guys. We had a special guest today, which I'm not going to tell you. We'll make it a surprise for next week, hopefully. Here's my switchboard. Let's see if this. Let's see if we'll go here. Hello. Hey.
Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm the switch guard, the switchboard repairman.
Oh, good. Well, you've done a good job. You've got us up and running here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So that was just Dr. David Sanford, a couples therapist, and before him you heard psychotherapist Hughes Kraft, and we are the darn guys. And we're going to have Dr. Mark Kiefner, clinical director of Bayside Neuro Rehabilitation Services, joining us again with some cutting-edge brain research called A Minute on the Mind. And I have a surprise for you guys. We have a special guest today. We're going to talk about what is love. And I thought we really needed a woman's perspective. The darn guys just couldn't handle us all on their own. So I do. I have psychotherapist Dulcie Whitman, who's going to join us. Yeah. So, and actually, I see Dulcie is on the line right now. Hello, Dulcie.
Good morning, Jim.
Hughes and David are here, too.
Hi, Hughes. Hi, David.
Hi, Dulcie.
Hi, Dulcie.
Good morning.
So,
Happy Labor Day.
Yes. What a treat to have you join us, Dulcie. What a treat.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Who wants to start out with trying to tackle this question, which has puzzled thinkers and philosophers for eons? What is love? Who wants to tackle that first?
Well, I know that when I gave it some thought this morning, and I had this thought that it mostly depended on who you ask.
Right.
You know, you ask poets and look through poetry and talk about all the allusions to red, red roses and soft animal bellies, you know. there's the story with Elizabeth Barrett Browning, who was, you know, suffering tragedy and ill health and in her late 30s, she meets Robert Browning and elopes and blossoms into health and writes the poem on, you know, how do I love thee, let me count the ways.
Right. Yeah, that's a classic, one of the great poems of all times. What about you, Hughes? What do you think of when trying to answer that question, what is love?
I think love, you know, as Dulcie hinted, it's not always about invoking red roses and champagne and romantic nights. It is a lot of hard work at times. And sometimes I joke with folks that love can be a four-letter word. And there is a lot of effort that needs to go into making love work. And sometimes love is kind of considered from a distance as a noun, you know, just something to kind of that's there all the time. But I consider it more of a verb, more of an action item that you need to kind of consistently move towards or be mindful of or in practice around, especially when it concerns another person in the universe that you have some tender feelings towards.
Yeah. You know, Hughes, that actually speaks to a question that has already come up on the chat. Can it really be love if two people have to work at it? And I think you were addressing that. What about you, David?
I think it helps a lot to make a distinction between love as feelings and love as behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That's a distinction that has been meaningful to me in working with couples. And I think the media, the public, the poets, and certainly a great many couples tend to think of love primarily as feelings. Mm-hmm. And a lot of marriages, I think, have been based on love as feelings. I'm marrying you because I feel so much love for you. I think there are difficulties. From the perspective of the success of relationships, I think there are difficulties to emphasizing feelings rather than behavior where love's concerned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think there's also, you know, an issue of sometimes I love you means I need you. It's that I want you to love me. You know, I have an attraction, an attachment to you, and I want you to verify me or love me. And then there's the other side, as you said, David, of actions. You know, what are the actions that indicate love? And I think those are actions where you're taking care of your partner, where you're trying to make it so that they can reach their potential, so that they are okay, taken care of, blossoming. You really want the thing or the person that you love to be being as healthy and as alive as it possibly can. And I think it goes back to what you were saying, David, about actions.
Yeah, where feelings are concerned, one of the difficulty with our sort of common use of love is that we use it in so many different ways and in so many different situations. And you've mentioned one, you know, the one about falling in love is all about feelings. It's often infatuation,
right,
taken as so strong that it's a basis for building a lifetime relationship around it. And of course, the infatuation doesn't last very long.
Right.
And then there's also the question of love being used as I love your spaghetti marinara so much. I love going to bed with you. Oh, I just love that hat.
Yep.
There are so many instances in which the word has lost any particular meaning. That it's and yet it does, obviously, as feelings, love has. An essential dimension of love is the feeling part of love. Mm-hmm. The difficulty is in getting a fairly close, precise handle on what the feeling dimension of genuine love is, and also on not building a committed relationship primarily just on feelings.
Right. I think one definition of love is that you care about the other person as much or more than yourself. That you want them to thrive as much as you want yourself to thrive, or even more. I one of the things that was a powerful experience for me was when my nieces were born. And I had a feeling then that I had never had before, which was a visceral feeling that I would die for them. And it wasn't an intellectual thought, it wasn't an intellectual consideration, it was an actual physical, visceral feeling that I would die for them, because they were, you know, small and innocent and vulnerable, and I would die for them. And I think that's a component of love, how much you're willing to sacrifice. You know, as people say, they love their country, and certainly there are lots of people who sacrifice for their country. They're willing to give their life for their country. So their country in that instance, in that moment, is more important to them than their own life. I want to go to Dulcie for a second. A question coming in on the chat is love different for a man than a woman? What do you think, Dulcie?
I think that's one of the big questions, because most of us have only had an experience being one or the other, so we can't tell.
Most of us, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
we can't really tell if what seems to be the difference between what I'm feeling and what I'm talking about is because you're just you, or is it because you're a man?
Right.
You know, and I think there's certainly a lot in books and movies to suggest that, you know, we're from one planet and you're from the other one, and you know, we can't. You all you think about is sex, and all we think about is babies, and you know. So I think it's a good question, and then you know the idea that if we're naturally set up to feel love as a way to keep the species alive and reproducing, then we would certainly envision that maybe there's a difference between the love that a man feels and the love that a woman feels based on our different roles in reproduction.
Right. I mean, maybe we'll need to wait for Mark on this in terms of the biology of it, but Hughes, what do you think in terms of how much is biology and how much is really an ethereal concept, an ethereal feeling of love?
I don't know if this answers this directly, but I was thinking in the back of my mind, what is the purpose of love? You know, what is the purpose?
Yep.
You know, so there's obviously a biological component to this relative to maybe the moving on in the species and evolving. But it had me thinking, too, that love can and does probably change. I mean, my wife and I have reproduced, and, you know, we've moved on, and I still love my wife, you know, and but I feel like I love her differently and in a deeper, different way than I did when I first met her in those first few years afterwards and around the kids. And, you know, there's a maturing that goes on. So, I think love is probably one of those hardest words to define ever. And a lot of people have put a lot of time in it over the millenniums to try to figure it out, from poets to scientists. So, you know, I don't think we're going to nail it down. But to think about what purpose it serves, but also how to honor it in your day-to-day life and in your relationships. And, you know, back to another point that I think David was making, I think it does get watered down when everybody just says, you know, I love you. It's almost like a hello and a goodbye a lot, and kind of loses some of its oomph or some of its meaning sometimes when it's overused, versus maybe letting the feeling drive that word sometimes and really feeling it and then expressing it versus just trying to say it all the time as a way of trying to feel it or honor it.
Right. I think those are right on points. It brought up for me that, you know, sometimes with working with couples, I will ask them to say to their partner what they love about them. To actually, you know, make that more concrete. I think I'm going to shift a little bit more to saying what do you do to express your love? How do you show your love? Back to your point, David, about behavior. What is it that constitutes your loving acts towards your loved one?
One of the things when I'm working with couples and with individuals is asking them to notice both what makes them feel, we use the word cherishing, what makes them feel cherished, and when they do something for someone that they love, I ask them to notice the actual feeling inside themselves and notice how when you access that feeling and you act on it, you actually feel it grow inside yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like it's kind of like a fertilizing process. And I think that's something that most people can relate to, that feeling of when you start to give towards someone you love, you actually feel it increase. And then, you know, likewise kind of more often feel it in return, which ultimately, I guess, you know, we're all pretty much concerned with the idea of receiving it as much as giving it, you know?
Right. I think that's a great point, and it really strikes me when I buy a gift for my beloved, I I really get infused with that feeling of loving and trying to pick out something and imagining, you know, how they will, and how they will feel when they get it, and you know what it will do for them in their spirit. So the actual act of doing something like that makes me sort of intensify or at least focus on that loving feeling. David, I interrupted you a minute ago. What were you going to say?
Well, a while back, we had a couple of topics on the table, both of which I think are really rich ones, and we're spending a little bit more time on. And one was how are males and females, how are men and women different in terms of love? I don't remember whether that was different in terms of how they express love or experience love or whatever.
That was just a question on the blog. Yeah, a question on the chat. That was just a question on the chat.
Oh, it was. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so it's a little different for a man than a woman. Yeah.
On that one, I think that women are at least socialized to behave differently in relationships than men are. And I think that women, you know, I'm about to make some generalizations and I can already see the limitations.
I know, I can't wait to hear them.
Go right ahead, David. Go right ahead.
You found your shovel, get out, dig the hole, right? Okay, I'm going to cover myself by calling them generalizations. And the first one that I'm already ready to take back before I even say it is that I think that commonly women tend to be more expressive in the varieties of ways in which they give love or express love as a generalization than men are. I think that women are hardwired differently and certainly socialized to the importance of relationship to a degree that men generally aren't. I mean, if women are focused very much on relationship and all of the different ways of that people are present to each other and share each other's company, and men tend to be much more hierarchical and much more oriented toward individual assertion and the solution of problems, if that's the way it is, and I think it could be debated whether it is or not, but if that's the way it is, then it seems to me it follows that women are going to have a deeper involvement in the expressions of love in relationship than men are likely to have.
David, you used
was that a hole, friends, or what? Did I build a little?
I'm gonna bail you out, David, so I'm not get reactions to that. And you mentioned a key word there, hardwired, and that always makes me think of Dr. Mark Kiefner.
That it does.
And he's on the line here, so welcome, Dr. Mark.
Hi, guys, and hi, Dulcie.
Hi, Mark.
How are you?
I'm great.
I don't know if I like the notion of hardwired making you think of me, but but I have been listening today, and I have the day off. I've been listening to the whole conversation today, which is very interesting. So here's the hardwired version of events. I never thought of it that way before. You know, we talked several sessions ago about Helen Fisher, who's an anthropologist who believes that the brain has three systems for relationship development: the lust system, the romance system, and then the attachment system. And so, when we think about long-lasting love, we're talking about that attachment system. And I don't remember which one of you used the words express and show love. But I do think that there is a for most people, there is an intentionality that's important. But one of the interesting things is that it's not just intention. There's a guy named Arthur Aaron at Stony Brook who's looked at the brain scans of people who have been married for more than 10 years and claim to be very happily married and very passionate about their partner. And what he finds is that when he shows them a picture of their partner and scans their brain, that an area of the brain called the ventral tegmental area, which produces dopamine, which is associated with pleasure and passion, lights up, much more so than other people who report unhappy marriages or less happy marriages. Mm. So there's something about the production of dopamine, which gives us pleasure, which links with the notion of being happily married for longer periods of time. Now, the interesting thing is that dopamine is also associated with novelty. So,
therein lies the problem.
Therein lies the problem, but perhaps also the solution. Because one of the things that often happens. I'm not suggesting serial
marriage.
Get the shovel over.
Get in trouble here, aren't I? What's thinking,
no,
Bungie?
No, not really. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I think one of the things that often happens in long-term marriages is that things get kind of stale.
Right.
I don't know if anybody's going to disagree with that, but
things get stale.
I've heard.
Yeah, things get kind of stale. And so, you get used to things. You squeeze the toothpaste the same way, the towels are the same, you do the same things, you have the same conversations, all that sort of stuff. And so the novelty wears off. And so there's an argument to be made here for stimulating novelty in the relationship as a way of maintaining that some of that passion and some of that interest.
Mm-hmm. I think that's an excellent point, and I think it actually bears out in terms of my own experience and experiences with couples who've gotten into really kind of deadening routines and getting them out of those routines, and it can make a powerful difference in terms of their appreciation for each other, excitement about each other, caring about each other. So I think it it's interesting that the field data is in conjunction with the biological data, the neurological
Mark,
data.
Yeah.
A question, Mark.
Sure.
Back to dopamine for a second. Do you think that elevation of dopamine indicates that couples in which that's the case are going to have an easier time with marriage, or could it be that when couples build a really pleasurable marriage, that fact stimulates the dopamine production in each of them?
That's an interesting question, David. There's actually some interesting research that suggests that there's a gene that whose name I can't pronounce. That's responsible for the level of dopamine production that you have, and that people who have a gene, that gene or a variant of that gene, which gives them more dopamine production, tend to be happier people in general, and tend to be happier in their relationships. People who have don't have that gene and have lower output of dopamine tend to be more tend to have shorter marriages and more distress in their marriages. So there may be some genetic basis for your happiness in marriage, but that it comes back to the nature nurture question, and I think that no matter what your genetic makeup is, which of course you can't change, the question is how do you nurture the relationship in such a way that that you make the best out of what there is.
Do you think it would be too much to say that the possible prescription of a dopamine increasing medication, whether it's, you know, anti-anxiety medication or whatever it may be, that ought to be a sort of a possible application, have a possible application in couples therapy?
Yeah, I think there's a great application for that. I mean, I think the antidepressant medications in particular tend to have a dopaminergic effect, as well as a serotonin effect. And so, if you've ever been really depressed and you've taken one of those medications, it's sometimes surprising how much your unhappiness is related to your biochemistry.
We're running out of time here. We've got about 4 minutes left, actually a little under 4 minutes. And Dulcie, I wondered before we left if you had a question for Mark.
Well, one of the things I remember reading about was, particularly with women's hormonal cycles, lifetime cycles, that as a woman goes through menopause, that there's a decrease in dopamine production. And, you know, the idea that towards later in life, that if women are less rewarded for, I think I heard the phrase in Christian Northrup's book, in deferral to the needs of others,
mm-hmm.
you know, what would be the implications for that in terms of relationship?
Mm-hmm. Is that a question for me?
Well, I think it's out there. In
yeah. I think that, you know, the problem with looking at things from my particular perspective is that it often doesn't tackle the kind of more human existential aspect of what is involved in people's lives. And so, you know, you can talk about dopamine and oxytocin and genes, but the truth is the package you get is the package you get, and then it's your job and your therapist's job and your partner's job to sort of make that work. And so we can look at medicines, but there's a lot of other ways to look at that also, and to kind of create, at least I think there is, to create a kind of a sense of happiness and a sense of contentment and a sense of intentionality in our relationships.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to have to wrap it up. And Hughes, do you want to take the job of just a brief summary of what we've talked about today?
Well, I guess I just want to end by, you know, just what Mark just said here to wind up makes a lot of sense. And part of the action item to help love is maybe to, you know, accept what genes you come with and what dopamine level you may have. But it is an art of knowing where you're at and also taking steps towards love. And that may mean reaching out for some novelty in your life, getting out of the box, bringing some of the art of love back into your life by shaking up your life if it seems to be, you know, if you're kind of struggling to find love and to take some action around it.
Yeah, great. Listen, guys, we're gonna have to go, but I think we've only touched the surface on this. We've got a bunch more questions from the chat. And so I think we ought to do What is Love Part 2 next week and see if we can get into this even more. Dulcie, thank you so much.
Followed by 3 and 4.
Oh, 3 and 4.
Followed by parts 3 and 4.
David's always a glutton. Always a glutton.
That is love, year 10.
Put the shovel down.
And Dulcie, thank you for joining us. And if you would come on again, it would be great. So
thank you.
I'll talk
to you
about that again. But thanks for being here. You added a lot to the show. So we'll see you next week or whenever. So goodbye from the Darn Guys. And here's Megan Jo Wilson to take us away.
Well, in the Take me away.